Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Redbox Podcast. I'm Matt Jolly. It's Wednesday, so it must be PMQ's Unpacked. Patrick McGuire and I pause the action from the House of Commons to analyse in real time as Keir Starmer returns to grill Boris Johnson about you know what. And if you find yourself at a loose end at midday on a Wednesday, you can now watch along as we now stream PMQ's Unpacked on the Times Radio YouTube channel. So go to YouTube, search Times Radio, subscribe so you don't miss anything, and then you can watch us live as we pause the Commons action every Wednesday at midday. But don't worry, if you miss it, you can always catch up with it on the podcast, as you are doing right now. First, the columnist panel, and on a Wednesday, it is, of course, now Alibert. Yes, it's Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton. So we were asking what would Boris Johnson be doing in 5 years' time? Just to sort of throw things further into the future. What do you think, Alice?
Well, he might just have finished his Shakespeare book, do we think, ever? I mean, that's what started the pandemic. He was writing it and then just didn't even think about it. Yeah, no, that goes all the way back. And hopefully not an editor, but I bet he gets a column back.
And
that's what he wants to do, doesn't he?
So we're assuming he's not in number 10.
I can't imagine it now, can you? I mean, I thought that was assumed by the question.
But it's interesting, though, isn't it? You know, the guy who won this shock landslide just over a year, 2 years ago, we're now assuming he's definitely, what, so he doesn't lead the Tories into the next election?
He might not lead the Tories into next week, depending on what happens at PMQ.
Yeah. I think Starmer's got a real problem, though, Keir Starmer, because it's such a open goal now, isn't
yeah.
it? That you
yeah.
go into PMQs. And you've got this situation where you can't lose, only you can.
Only
it's
you
almost
can.
Too
and it happens
easy.
It's all the time. Every time we talk about PMQs,
yeah.
we go back and revisit. Particularly, I remember the number of times that you're like, Ed Miliband cannot muck this up. There's no yeah. way. David Cameron is in so much trouble on this. And then you come out and you just think, what the hell's going on? How's David Cameron turned that around? Although I do yeah. think David Cameron was better at it than Boris Johnson.
Yeah. Keir goes a bit sort of forensic and lawyerly when he just needs to go completely populist and just be as simplistic as possible.
He basically needs Angela Rayner to write it for
exactly. Yeah, Rayner would be better
because
yeah.
her she obviously knew that Starmer's gonna be back today because her yeah. the thing that she did yesterday where she read out these yeah. awful stories of people who didn't see loved ones who were dying yeah. and all that on May the 20th. It's yeah. interesting though. Where do you think he'll be in 5 years? What?
I don't know, but it'll probably have something to do with cheese, I imagine. I think it could be cheese related.
It could be the face of cheese.
It could be the face of cheese. There'll be a cheese board. I see a cheese board in his future.
Well, you could see a sort of quite American advert of him sort of spinning yeah. a big cheese board.
Yeah. Who's yeah. the guy from Blur? Is it Alex James?
Alex James.
Who went off to do... Well, I think, yeah, Boris could take over from him as some sort of cheese related. You know, and I can see Carrie.
Cheesemonger.
Sort of, cheese, yes. Yeah. Cheesemongering. I can see Carrie in that kind of role.
Can you? We're assuming they're still together in 5 years after he's left Downing Street.
Yeah, I think we have to be yeah. gracious about that. I think if, as long as he goes, yeah. I think Carrie and him can go. There's something called cottage court, very Carrie, when you go to a lovely little cottage and you make cheese and you bake, like, and she can wear her lovely long dresses.
Exactly. It's sort of a bit 18th century, isn't it? It's, you know, kind of exile, internal exile in a cottage. You can wear a long dress as well. pictures of with various cheeses.
Honestly, we've had so many messages of what people think he's going to be doing. He's doing the tea trolley at the Tony Blair Institute. Greg says on the phone to his publisher trying to explain why the Shakespeare book still isn't finished. Which is very good. Jonathan says visiting the maternity ward. Lots of people suggesting he's going to be a presenter on Times Radio. I'm not sure he's got the skills to,
to
pull that off. I think the people suggesting GB News might be slightly more accurate. If we step back, and because somebody I saw tweeted this morning, Alice, saying this is the most important PMQs since Westlands. I looked back at that, and actually that was in 1985, 86.
It was.
And Margaret Thatcher went on and won a landslide in 87, so I'm not sure. And also, I think the example they pulled wasn't actually a PMQs. We do get very excited about these moments, these huge moments.
That's the problem. So I think there's too much invested in this. So I think actually it's not going to happen probably at PMQs. And the problem about Boris is that every time that he's up against something, he does smirk, and it's the smirk that really irritates everyone. But most people aren't going to listen to PMQs or watch it or see that. They might get a clip of it. And I think Keir Starmer's going to find it very difficult to land many on him. And he will probably apologise in some form, Boris, to try and stave off his backbenchers. It will be interesting to see what the people behind him are doing. So all those Tory MPs are going to find this really excruciating. That's what's going to happen. Mm. They're then going to have to go back. And it's going to take a few days for that to filter back from their constituencies, from what they think, from the tea rooms. And that's going to be the crucial answer. It's not going to happen overnight, I don't think, unless he does something really disastrously stupid today.
Westland was actually Michael Heseltine walking out of a cabinet meeting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then nobody really noticing. About the very obscure issue of whether a helicopter was going to be built, partially built in Yeovil.
Yeovil. It's a big deal where I'm from.
That was a grown-up political argument, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And now we're arguing about cheese and parties
And I can't see any of the cabinet at the moment.
Well, that's
walking.
The question. What? Because as we were discussing earlier, you know, if this was a cabinet minister who was in trouble, well, you know, ultimately the prime minister is the one who decides, you know, looked at the evidence, can we ride this out? Yeah. If not, you've got to go, take the sting out of it and all that. In order for the prime minister to go, he either needs to accept full responsibility and do the right thing.
Well, he's got to get rid of himself,
really.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not really his
he's
style.
He's never taken responsibility.
Boris is capable of taking responsibility in words. But then not necessarily doing anything.
Yeah,
I mean, I can perfectly foresee him issuing a grovelling apology and saying, or you know, and doing that kind of act. But then
He'd still be there next week.
Right,
he'd still be there. So the way this moves on beyond the usual suspects, Tory backbenchers saying he's got a, you know, he's not, so is if the cabinet move, and that's, it feels like that's a long way off yet.
And it won't be Sue Gray who's looking at the parties and who Boris Johnson's hiding behind the whole time, because actually she's a civil servant, so it's very difficult for her to actually come down and say, you know, this is unacceptable. But if she does issue a report that is really damaging, then it may be someone like Rishi Sunak who goes enough, or I can't see Liz Truss doing it.
It's the old thing, going back to Michael Heseltine, the old thing, he who wields the knife doesn't wear the crown.
Indeed.
And I wouldn't be surprised if There's a world where I can see it. By the Sunday papers, we might be hearing that Liz Truss isn't happy spoken to Boris Johnson and says he needs to clear things. You know, a little bit of behind the scenes.
There were beginnings of manoeuvrings before Christmas, weren't there?
Yeah.
Sajid refused to come out and defend him on the studio round, didn't he? A couple of weeks before Christmas, which I thought was quite significant.
I think Sajid Javid's the most likely person to do it in some ways, because he is quite honourable and he has resigned before and he's come back. So
he came closest, I think, by doing that. I mean, that looked to me like that. And that's kind of, and also we're seeing in the paper that it's saying cabinet members speaking openly. Well, they're not speaking that openly, are they? I don't know what it means, because I've never been in the lobby, but does that mean that they're talking to lobby journalists? But
I think it might mean that the actual cabinet minister has spoken to the journalists rather than their spat.
I see. Right.
I think that's probably in the strange world. There's probably a whole programme in the strange code.
Yes, I do.
They will be texting.
Right.
But they won't be doing it to many people, and they will be, I think they are, they just don't know what to do, do they? If you're a cabinet minister now, some of them, like Priti Patel, is just so loyal that she'll keep going.
And also, probably someone like Priti Patel knows that her best chance of remaining as Home Secretary,
she's bound up with
her
him,
only chance,
is
really
on being lashed to Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
Whereas you're right, Sajid Javid's an interesting, because all the focus is on, and also Sajid Javid probably knows that, because he still has leadership ambitions, that the way to get to that point is he has to do, you know, Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss are in a better position. So to try and leapfrog over them taking a principled stand.
He needs to take. He needs to take a risk, whereas they would calculate that the risk wasn't quite worth taking.
Yeah, let someone else.
And also, he's not involved in the same way with Boris Johnson as the rest of them are, because he did leave and then come back again. And actually, he has always maintained some sort of distance, which I think probably is going to benefit him now.
Yeah, it's interesting. All eyes on Sajid Javid. Right, good. Right, we'll write that down. Keep an eye on him. Alice, let's talk about farmers. Because it's sort of, the government tried to sort of get, at least last week, tried to get back on the front foot. You know, we've had cladding, we've had a new policy on rewilding, trying to do the work of government. It's all been a bit overshadowed now. But if people weren't across it, explain this idea of rewilding and the role of farmers in that.
So rewilding, in a way, is an excellent idea because, you know, we're depleted in Britain. We haven't got all sorts of animals, birds, you know, flora, fauna has disappeared. So we desperately need to do something. But the idea of rewilding has now become unbelievably contentious, which is extraordinary because it sounds such a lovely word. But it is a lot of big landowners and people like Ed Sheeran who've become involved, and Leonardo DiCaprio. So it's very odd that it's become this sort of incredibly kind of cool but also rich term for buying up estates around Britain and then putting them, you know, almost creating a kind of Disneyland for yourself.
Yeah.
And actually they're not going to be shared. And the problem is there are farmers on that land. And so I think what I felt very strongly is that we've forgotten about the people involved. And Leonardo has this brilliant bit there when he starts talking about indigenous peoples and he wants them to help too, which actually we would call farmers.
But, yeah,
you know, he's obviously never met one. And you know, so you think that what I feel is that we really need to get the farmers on side and they should be the ones doing the rewilding. So they should be able to farm, which is crucial because we do still need to produce some food and we won't if it's all rewilded.
Well, that's an interesting point because I spoke to my uncle who's a farmer and to ask him exactly about it because we were supposed to have George Eustace on last week and he rewilded himself and just disappeared. and he was making that point that if we, in terms of the environmental thing, growing more of our own food rather than importing it, seems to be a sensible thing to pursue. But you can't be doing that if we're also rewilding all the land that would have otherwise, you know, if we reach the point where we've rewilded the land so we then have to import the food we would have otherwise grown, that strikes me as a...
Which is insane, really, because that's going against every point, because then you're going to have to, you know, go to other countries and expect them to suffer the same problems that we have. So I think what you need to do is say to the farmers, and a lot of them are quite on board now and they're beginning to get more and more interested in it, in that you can actually have these regenerative farms that are carbon neutral, actually even carbon positive, and you can also produce food. It's just a balance, really. But if you cut farmers out of it, I can't really see who's going to be looking after the countryside apart from, you know, singers and actors. And
terrifying. They're all just, you know, putting up big fences so they can see some deer when they get up in the morning.
So that's the problem as well, is that no one else is going to be allowed to see it.
Yeah.
So that you're going to be stopped from walking across the countryside in quite large areas. And that's already happened in Scotland. It's been very difficult because, you know, Scotland has been bought up by the, you know, super rich all around the world.
The other thing about this whole scheme, Robert, and I think it hasn't really been focused on hugely, is that when we were in the EU, the farm subsidies came across and the UK government could only spend that money on farmers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were just involved in the process of dishing it out.
It was hypothecated,
Now,
it's not.
It's in just the general pot. And you do wonder at what point, you know, when there's a big election row about money for the NHS or money for welfare, who comes for this pot first? And farmers, quite a lot of farmers, not all of them, but quite a lot of farmers liked Brexit because they thought this was going to mean we could stand on our own 2 feet. But some of that isn't ring-fenced permanently forever.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, the NFU used to be like the big, this amazing kind of cast iron lobby for the Tory party, and now it's fallen. It must be the lobby who's lost the most power in the last 40 or 50 years, because it was taken as read that it was like the Brewers, you know, they had the ear of the Tory party, and now farmers are, as opposed to landowners, farmers are generally, you say, £26,000 a year average income. You start to feel sorry for farmers. What I don't feel sorry for landowners at all. But we need to make the distinction between the two, I think, because landowners are often, you know, celebrities or just aristocrats. I mean, the list of landowners in Britain has not changed that much over 100 years. It's amazing if you look at the stats. I mean, the top 10, five of them are the same people, I mean, or the same family.
Yeah.
Duke so-and-so, especially in Scotland.
You've seen a lot is councils selling off farms that they, you know, used to be like county estates. And they've all been bought up by hedge fund managers and all. Yes. You know, they're now the landlords.
Yeah.
Well, see, everyone farmers. Forgets that a lot of the farmers, well, nearly a third of them, are actually tenant farmers.
Yeah,
they own their own land, so they can't sell it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, and so particularly in a place like Devon and Yorkshire, you've got a totally different structure where they can't sell anything. They're making less than 26,000, most of them.
Yeah.
And they don't own anything, so they can't just leave. They're actually, the only thing they can do is hand it on to the next generation. Yeah. And they've been completely ignored by the government, who don't seem to notice they're there.
And there was a really interesting, I think it was in Tim Shipman's piece in the Sunday Times. He was talking about the Labour Party and how they're trying to really focus on these particular seats and all of that. And I think there was a suggestion that Luke Pollard, who's an MP in Plymouth, had been moved from the environmental brief because he'd done quite a good job of basically winning over farmers and getting in with the NFU. Yeah. There's no farmers in the seats that we need to. And so you sort of wonder, where are the farmers getting that voice? Because if they're not in the Tories, the Labour Party aren't interested.
No, and rural poverty. I mean, Cornwall, as we know, is the poorest county in England. And I think somewhere like Herefordshire, a very agricultural place, not far behind, there's a big problem of rural poverty, and it's unseen. I mean, if you think the average inner city estate is unseen, which it is, then it's even less visible in the middle of the countryside.
And at the same time, we're obsessed by the countryside now, so there's so many books on the countryside. So, you know, everyone really, particularly after lockdown, everyone really wants green spaces. Yeah. So actually, you can say to the farmers, you know, we're going to subsidise you to do this more. And George used to start it, but in fact what he needed to do is go to the smallest farmers and say to them, look, you're the ones that need help. I mean, there's no point in giving it to these huge estates, really, because they should be able to support themselves.
Exactly, exactly right. We're talking of unseen in the rural areas. Rishi Sunak has just tweeted that he is in Ilfracombe in Devon.
Oh.
Which means,
brilliant place.
As the Press Association reports, the journey from there to Parliament take more than 4 hours by car, suggesting he may not be in the chamber to support Boris Johnson at PMQs.
And it's got the Damien Hirst there, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. It's nice, Ilfracombe. He says he was excited to be in the town with the North Devon MP, Sir Lane Saxby. So there we are.
When do you think he decided to go there? He looks at a timetable. Yesterday.
It's a bit like John Major with his tooth. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, toothache. Yeah, exactly.
Ilfracombe will become famous now for it.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here first. It's all happening in Ilfracombe. Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton there. And, of course, you can read them in The Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Red Box podcast. Now it's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Patrick Maguire.
Matt Chorley bringing you PMQs Unpacked here on Times Radio. We'll pause the action to explain what is going on, but let's go straight to the House of Commons.
But before we do, I want to remind everybody... The Prime Minister's question. I would like to point out that the British Sign Language interpretation of proceedings is available to watch on Parliament Live TV. We now start with Prime Minister's questions. Dr. James Davies. Yeah.
Question number one, Mr. Speaker.
Well, sir. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I know that the whole House will want to join me in paying tribute to Jack Dromey. His working life was devoted to his trade union members and, in recent years, his constituents in Birmingham Erdington. I was deeply saddened to hear of his death, and my thoughts are with Harriet and the family and all those who knew him as a friend. Mr. Speaker, I want to apologise. I know that millions of people across this country have made extraordinary sacrifices over the last 18 months. I know the anguish that they have been through, unable to mourn their relatives, unable to live their lives as they want or to do the things they love. And I know the rage they feel with me and with the government I lead when they think that in Downing Street itself the rules are not being properly followed by the people who make the rules. And though I cannot anticipate the conclusions of the current inquiry, I have learned enough to know that there were things we simply did not get right. And I must take responsibility. Number 10 is a big department with the garden as an extension of the office, which has been in constant use because of the role of fresh air in stopping the virus. And when I went into that garden just after six on the 20th of May 2020 to thank groups of staff before going back into my office 25 minutes later to continue working, I believed implicitly that this was a work event. But, Mr. Speaker, with hindsight, I should have sent everyone back inside. I should have found some other way to thank them. And I should have recognised that even if it could be said technically to fall within the guidance, there would be millions and millions of people who simply would not see it that way. People who suffered terribly, people who were forbidden from meeting loved ones at all, inside or outside. And to them and to this House, I offer my heartfelt apologies. And all I ask is that Sue Gray be allowed to complete her inquiry into that day and several others so that the full facts can be established. And I will, of course, come back to this House and make a statement. Mr. Speaker, this morning I had meetings with ministerial colleagues and others. In addition to my duties in this House, I shall have further such meetings later today.
OK, well, let's jump in there, as we do here on PMQ's Unpacked. Patrick Maguire, a full apology there from Boris Johnson. Further than we were expecting?
Yes. I mean, quite the journey, that, wasn't it? To start with, I thought there was a gap between the tone, i.e. uncharacteristically sombre, from Boris Johnson. When he started talking about fresh air circulating and Number 10's ambiguous status as a house, a rambling, ramshackle government department with a garden that was at once an office space and a conventional domestic garden, I thought, hang on, here come the excuses. But then he preempted those with something quite close to a full apology. It'd be interesting to see how Keir Starmer now plays this, because as you say, he's gone much further.
And also, crucially, given his reluctance to do so so far, for the first time, Boris Johnson has confirmed he went to a lockdown-breaking party in the Downing Street Garden. He says he believed that this was a work event, but with hindsight, he should have gone back and sent everyone back inside. So there we are. That's Boris Johnson saying he wants to apologise to the nation, understanding the rage, I think, and anguish, he said at one point, that people are suffering from. Obviously try to take the sting out of what Keir Starmer's got to say. So we can now go to the House of Commons. This is question number one from Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I join with the comments about Jack Dromey? We will, I think, be doing tributes in due course in relation to Jack. Well, there we have it. After months of deceit and deception, yeah. The pathetic spectacle of a man who's run out of road. Yeah. His defence that he didn't realise he was at a party it is so ridiculous that it's actually offensive to the British public. He's finally been forced to admit what everyone knew, that when the whole country was locked down, he was hosting boozy parties in Downing Street. Yes. Is he now going to do the decent thing and resign? Yes.
Let's just jump in there, Patrick Wyatt. This is the first time that Keir Starmer's called for Boris Johnson to resign.
Exactly. This week has been very significant in terms of Labour's messaging. They've done two things for the first time. One, they're calling Boris Johnson a liar repeatedly. And I put this to a senior member of Keir Starmer's inner circle yesterday. And they said, well, we finally crossed the line. The public can now be convinced. There's incontrovertible evidence. You know, this isn't a story from his traineeship at the Times or his affair with Passionella Wyatt. It is a material falsehood that he's told the British people that will, you know, the phrase James Johnson used in the Times this morning, a flash of anger. People will all be feeling that. And the second one, as you say, resignation. And why is he saying that? Well, because there is considerable, or there was this morning, considerable political pressure on the Tory benches. And the interesting question is, has Boris Johnson's apology taken the sting, you know, released some of the pressure from his own benches?
And the calculation that Keir Starmer will have made is you don't go around asking for people to resign all the time, partly because it loses currency, but also that tends to shore them up. And he clearly thinks that Boris Johnson is now so exposed, having just admitted that he was at this party. And as he pointed out, is the only person in the world who didn't realise he was at a party. Pathetic. I mean, it's proper strong language. Deceit, deception, pathetic, ridiculous. So that was Keir Starmer asks Boris Johnson if he's going to resign. What's Boris Johnson's answer?
Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it is...
Hancock went.
I think somebody will be going for an early cup of tea as well.
Can I just say, the question's being asked. I want to know the answer. Your constituents want to know the answer. I don't need any extra help either. So please, Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the point that he's making about the event that I attended. I want to repeat that I thought it was a work event, and Mr. Speaker, I regret very much that we did not do things differently that evening. And Mr. Speaker, as I've said, and I take responsibility and I apologise, Mr. Speaker. But as for his political point, I don't think that he should preempt the outcome of the inquiry. And he will have a further opportunity, Mr. Speaker, I hope, to question me as soon as possible.
Well, he didn't rule out that he was going to resign.
He didn't rule it out. He just dismissed it as a political point. The trouble with these politicians, they do keep making political points.
They keep doing politics.
To some extent, a huge moment there. We've had two big moments. Boris Johnson apologising, admitting he was at this party. Keir Starmer has called for him to resign. He's got five questions left. Can he keep up the momentum, do you think?
I think he... Now, if you pardon the pun, he labours the point. I understand that at some point in this sequence of questions, he's probably likely to lay it on quite thick with stories of the bereaved, of the kind we heard in the Commons yesterday.
From Angela Rayner.
For the debate the Prime Minister didn't turn up to. So there's still plenty of road to run, but they've both got their clips for tonight's bulletins.
You can go online, you can watch the exchanges live on the Times Radio YouTube channel. You can see Patrick and I as well, if that's your thing. Loads of you are posting comments to it. A day late and a dollar short, says someone. How much more could Boris apologise? He's not going to resign. It's astonishing, says someone else. There you go, he's apologised. Let's move on, says someone. Every answer is Sue Gray. So if you want to let us know what you think of it, go to the Times Radio YouTube channel where you can watch the exchange. There's an awful lot of head shaking and shouting going on in the comments too. Let's go back to question number two from Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer.
Well, that apology was pretty worthless, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Let me tell him why this matters. Yesterday in this chamber, honourable members told heart-wrenching stories about the sacrifices people across the country were making. This House and the whole country were moved by the honourable member for Strangford.
Yeah.
As he talked about his mother-in-law dying alone, he was following the rules. Whilst the Prime Minister was partying in Downing Street, is the Prime Minister really so contemptuous of the British public that he thinks he can just ride this out?
Mr. Speaker, I heard the testimony of the honourable member opposite, and I echo his sentiments. It was deeply moving. Nobody who heard that could fail to have been moved. And I know that people up and down the country have made huge sacrifices throughout this pandemic, Mr. Speaker, and I understand the anger, the rage that they feel at the thought that that people in Downing Street were not following those rules. I regret the way the event I have described was handled, I bitterly regret it and wish that we could have done things differently. And I have and will continue to apologise for what we did. But, Mr Speaker, he must wait for the inquiry, which will report as soon as possible.
OK, let's just pause that there. Patrick McGuire, the thing that immediately springs to mind, 8th of December, when we had the first lot of party allegations, Boris Johnson said in the House of Commons, I repeat that I've been repeatedly assured since these allegations emerged that there was no party and no COVID rules were broken. He's now admitted that there was a party because he was at it.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, it's a different party because there are quite a few of these at stake, but... you know, this is the sort of thing. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up with sort of points of order and people demanding that you correct the record.
No, exactly. And if there are any substance to the allegation that he's misled the House of Commons, it puts him in a very tricky position. And it puts a lot of Tory MPs who have made that their bar for his resignation in a tricky position. Or it puts them in, they simply have to go through their threat to call him resign. He's left a little bit of wiggle room there, though. Interesting use of the... first person plural when he said we. I don't think it was the royal we. He's still talking about
the team.
The team.
Yeah.
And there isn't much taking of personal responsibility or the book stopping with Boris Johnson personally, despite the very sombre tone he's taking here.
Different messages coming in. Somebody saying, Boris validates what I said. It was not a party. It was not illegal. I mean, I'm not sure that's will be the view that lots take. Monty saying he didn't apologise for being at the party. He didn't realise that it was a party. He apologised for not dispersing the work gathering. Now it's back to Sue Gray. Well, for now, it's back to Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer.
Mr Speaker, when the Prime Minister's former health secretary broke the rules, he resigned. Yes. And the Prime Minister said he was right
Matt
to
Hancock.
Do so. When the Prime Minister's spokesperson laughed about the rules being broken, she resigned.
That's Allegra Stratton.
And the Prime Minister accepted that resignation. Why does the Prime Minister still think that the rules don't apply to him?
Well, Mr Speaker, that's not what I've said. And I understand the point that he makes. As I've said, Mr Speaker, I regret the way things happened on the evening in question, and I apologise. But if I may say to him, I do think it would be better if he waited until the full conclusion of the inquiry, until the full facts are brought before this House, Mr Speaker, and he will then have an opportunity to put his points again.
Here, stop.
I mean, he's trying to just get through this, isn't he, Boris Johnson? It's not, you know, he's not... this might be the first one we get through without any reference to the European Medicines Agency or Captain Hyper.
Vaccination and vacillation, yeah.
He just knows he's just got to just take his medicine today.
Yes, but, I mean, this in microcosm will be the tactic he and Number 10 employ for the next week, fortnight, however long it takes for Sue Gray to report. Right, this is a ready-made stock answer for whoever faces Stig and asthma tomorrow. Whichever poor cabinet minister is up, you imagine Gillian Keegan's phone might be ringing this evening, right? They will say, oh, the Prime Minister rightly apologised yesterday, and of course it would be wrong for us to prejudge anything Sue Gray says. I don't think that's going to wash, given
but
the scale
also,
of anger.
But also, that is what Boris Johnson did on Monday, when he literally laughed about when he was asked, you know, were you at the party? And he laughed and said, that's a question for Sue Gray. He's now confirmed he was there. He knew the law because he passed the law. And he was there. So I'm not sure quite what Sue Gray's role is anymore, counting volivants.
Especially because they seem to have, you know, second-guessed what Sue Gray is going to say.
Yeah.
That's a very, you know, unlike most of Boris Johnson's speeches, you can tell he did not write that himself. There was lots of legally precise language, i.e., you know, technically not in breach of the rules, but acknowledging the broader public sentiment. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if... a senior civil servant such as Sue Gray had written that. In another world, Sue Gray wrote that statement. But anyway.
Yeah, well, let's see how Keir Starmer gets on now. Question number four.
This just isn't working, Prime Minister.
No.
Everyone can see what happened.
Exactly.
It started with reports of boozy parties in Downing Street during lockdown. The Prime Minister pretended that he had been assured there were no parties.
Yeah.
How that fits with this defence out, I do not know.
Exactly.
Then the video landed, blowing the Prime Minister's first defence out of the water. So then he pretended he was sickened and furious about the parties. Now it turns out he was at the parties all along.
Yeah.
Can't the Prime Minister see why the British public think he's lying through his teeth?
Prime Minister, it was what the public think, not what a member is saying.
Just to be clear, what Tory MPs there are pointing out is in the House of Commons you can't accuse someone of being a liar. Keir Starmer has very cleverly worded that to say that the public think he's been lying through his teeth, which is a
exactly.
very subtle difference.
Using his lawyerly wiles to get around the standing orders. I did think that was a question I was going to pose at the start of this session. How will Keir Starmer square Labour's very belligerent public messaging with the rules of the chamber? They've done it very artfully there.
Yeah, while Keir Starmer was socking it to him there, you've got Dominic Raab on one side and Liz Truss on the other side of Boris Johnson.
It's a good job Liz Truss is wearing a mask. I'm sure she's licking her lips at the predicament the Prime Minister finds himself in.
Rishi Sunak, unfortunately, isn't at PMQs because he's found
he's
himself
in
Ilfracombe, which is lovely at this time of year. Let's go back to the Commons.
Order. And I certainly don't need any help from round here. If somebody wants to help me, they can help somewhere else. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, it's up to the right honourable gentleman to choose how he conducts himself in this place. And he's wrong. He's wrong. I say to him that he is wrong.
Keir Starmer's got his head in his hands there.
He is wrong in what he said in he said what he is wrong what he said is wrong in several key respects, but Mr. Speaker, that does not detract from the basic point that I want to make today, which is that I accept that we should have done things differently on that evening. As I've said to the House, I believe that the events in question were within the guidance and were within the rules, and that was certainly the assumption on which I operated. But can I say to him, Mr. Speaker, that he should wait before he jumps to conclusions, Mr. Speaker. And a lawyer should respect the inquiry. I hope that he will wait until the facts are established and brought to this House.
Let's just jump in there. Now, there's an interesting discrepancy appearing here, Patrick McGuire. Keir Starmer keeps referring to events and parties, plural. Boris Johnson is still referring to the evening, the event. He's not conceding any other parties.
No, he's. It's not an apology for a culture of late-night drinking. He is apologising, while at the same time sort of insisting it was within the rules. He wasn't personally culpable. It was a work event. Oh, hadn't all these people worked awfully hard? So, yeah, there is a big gap there, and I think that gap might be a pitfall for the Prime Minister, because the anger is clearly broader and more at this point more amorphous, right, than simply being about this party. This may have lit the kindling, but
Boris Johnson saying, you know, a lawyer should respect the inquiry process, and he says that he felt it didn't breach the rules. So clearly he's hoping, or maybe he knows, that Sue Gray is going to conclude that yes, there was a gathering, but no, it didn't breach the rules. You know, by precise detail, you know, but in spirit, well, people around the country weren't seeing people, weren't going to work, but only able to meet one other person outdoors. That's completely different to what was going on in the Garden of Number 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Nurses weren't able to go outside hospitals and have a knees up at the end of a long shift.
As much as people wouldn't have begrudged them at the time,
I'm
sure.
Well, exactly right. Exactly. Well, they're probably too tight. That was question number four. Let's go back to the House of Commons. It's PMQ's Unpacked here on Times Radio, where we pause the action to explain what's going on. You can watch along on the Times Radio YouTube channel, where you can also post your comments. And Glenn's just said, if Boris Johnson topples, it will not be due to Keir Starmer. Well, let's see if Keir Starmer has more success with question number five.
But, Mr. Speaker, so we've got the Prime Minister attending Downing Street parties, a clear breach of the rules. We've got the Prime Minister putting forward a series of ridiculous denials, which he knows are untrue. Yes. A clear breach of the ministerial code. Yeah. That code says ministers who knowingly mislead Parliament will be expected to offer their resignation. Yeah. Yeah. The party's over, Prime Minister. The only question is, will the British public kick him out? Will his party kick him out? Or will he do the decent thing and resign? Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to repeat that I think that the Right honourable gentleman, I know that it is his objective and he's paid to try to remove me from office, Mr Speaker, and I appreciate that and I accept that. But may I humbly suggest to him that he should wait until the inquiry has concluded. He should study it for himself. And I will certainly respond as appropriate, and I hope that he does. But in the meantime, yes, Mr Speaker, I certainly wish that things had happened differently on the evening of May the 20th, Mr Speaker, and I apologise for all the misjudgments that have been made, for which I take, Mr Speaker, full responsibility.
Keir Starmer.
I apologise for all of the mistakes that have been made and take full responsibility.
Again, it's that drawing a deliberate technical distinction between errors of judgment, which he can apologise for now and get ahead of the negative publicity and give those Tory MPs still shameless enough to be loyal, and taking the payroll soup, as it were, to give them political cover, and what Sue Gray will adjudicate on. Her terms of reference say she is meant to judge on whether whatever gathering was in breach of whatever guidance was in place at the time. And clearly that is the bit number 10 are contesting, even though the their disputing of it was buried very deep within that apology. And it's also clearly given Boris Johnson's gambit here what they think will get them off the hook if they can withstand the political pressure. And that's the outstanding question.
It does feel like an exercise to just try to get through things. Keep your messages coming in. Great to watch Boris squirming on your YouTube channel, says someone on Twitter. Has Matt Chorley been promised a bonus if he gets Boris Johnson to resign? He's lost all semblance of balance. No, if only, frankly. No bonuses here. We're just looking to get paid at all. You can keep watching on the YouTube channel. This is the last exchange then. The call to resign is probably a big moment for Keir Starmer. But generally, the last question is the one he sort of aims squarely at the news bulletins tonight. Let's see if he's got anything else up his sleeve.
The Prime Minister's a man without shame. Yeah. The public want answers to their questions.
Yeah.
Hannah Brady's father, Sean, was just 55 when he lost his life to COVID. He was a fit and healthy key worker. I spoke to Hannah last night, Prime Minister. Her father died just days before the drinks trolley was being wheeled through Downing Street. And last year, Hannah met the Prime Minister in the Downing Street garden. She looked the Prime Minister in the eye and told him of her loss. The Prime Minister told Hannah he'd done everything he could to protect her dad. Looking back, what Hannah told me last night was this. She realises that the Prime Minister had parted in that same garden the very day her dad's death certificate was signed. What Hannah wants to know is this. Does the Prime Minister understand why it makes her feel sick to think about the way that he's behaved?
Mr. Speaker, I sympathise deeply with Hannah, with people who have suffered up and down this country during the pandemic, and I repeat that I wish things had been done differently on that evening, Mr. Speaker, and I repeat my apology for all the misjudgments that may have been made, that were made on my watch in Number 10 and across a government. But I want to reassure the people of this country, including Hannah and her family, that, Mr. Speaker, we have been working to do everything we can to protect her and her family. And it is thanks to the efforts of this government that we have the most tested population in Europe, with 1.25 million tests being conducted every day. We've been working to ensure that this population, our country, has the most antivirals of any country in Europe. And, Mr. Speaker, it's because of the efforts of the government, of officials, of staff up and down Whitehall, that we've driven the fastest vaccine rollout in Europe, one of the fastest in the world. And that is the reason, Mr. Speaker, that we now have one of the most open economies, if not the most open economy in Europe, and one of the fastest growing economy, Mr. Speaker, in the G7. And, Mr. Speaker, whatever the mistakes that have been made on my watch, for which I apologise and which I fully acknowledge, that is the work, Mr. Speaker, that has been going on in Number 10 Downing Street.
We'll cut away then while the backbench questions take place. If there are, we'll bring you some more of those a bit later on. Patrick Maguire, How secure is Boris Johnson now as Prime Minister compared to 25 minutes ago?
I'm not convinced he has seen off the immediate danger at all. Mainly because, well, we're yet to see what the public make of that apology for, well, you know, if you're being uncharitable, it's an apology for being caught. If you're being generous to the Prime Minister, it's an apology for a culture of rule-breaking, neither of which are going to cut much muster with a public, who the Prime Minister acknowledges are feeling angry, if not vengeful, at the moment. And it remains to be seen whether that's convinced Conservative MPs. I'm not entirely sure it will have done.
And it was notable in that last exchange, Boris Johnson did slip into the slightly usual record about we vaccinate. You know, in fact, it was slightly repetitive. He went around in circles a bit, I think, because he wasn't quite building the cheers that he wanted. But the most tested in Europe, the most vaccinated in Europe, more antivirals than anyone else, fastest growing this and that in the G7, and trying to make the point that people working hard in Number 10 have helped deliver all of this. I'm not sure that's going to cut must because it was possible to do all that without then having a knees up in the garden.
No, exactly. And all we're hearing about, you know, Number 10 is an opaque place. Westminster is an opaque world for people who tune into politics at the top of the hour on Radio 2 or indeed Virgin Radio. And all they know of Number 10 at the moment is that it's a place where people drink late into the night when they're not supposed to. And I don't think, I don't think it's going to cut muster with the public. It might cut muster with Tory MPs, but equally, we both know these are people who are acutely conscious of any tremor in public opinion, particularly the new Tory MPs in Labour-facing constituencies who have narrow majorities and haven't experienced this before.
They haven't experienced this onslaught that they're getting in their inboxes.
And also, they feel none of the conventional fealty or loyalty to the Prime Minister that first-term MPs usually do. That's very obvious at this point.
Loads of comments on the YouTube channel. He's admitted going to one party. I wonder how many of the other 10 or more parties he also attended, says Paul. Melanie says, I'm furious with Boris and feel very sorry for the lady losing her dad, but the party had no bearing on the death of her father. It's a waste of a question. Starmer just sounds whingy more than anything. Keir Starmer really disappointed today, says someone else. Lots of you liking the YouTube channel, though, which is nice.
We're going to have to do it again now. We're going to have to get dressed up properly every Wednesday now.
let's go back to the House of Commons. We can hear from the SNP leader in Westminster, Ian Blackford.
In the SNP, Ian Blackford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I add my remarks in terms of Jack Dromey, someone who was a festy fighter for workers' rights and an inspiration to so many of us across this House for the way that he conducted himself. We will miss him, and condolences to Harriet and to the rest of the family. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister stands before us accused of betraying the nation's trust, of treating the public with contempt, of breaking the laws set by his own government. A former member of Her Majesty's Armed Forces, Paul, wrote to me this morning. His father died without the love and support of his full family around him because they followed the regulations, Prime Minister. Paul said, as an ex-soldier, I know how to follow the rules, but the Prime Minister has never followed any rules. He does what he wants and he gets away with it every time. The Prime Minister can't get away with it again. Will the Prime Minister finally do the decent thing and resign, or will his Tory MPs be forced to show him the door?
Prime Minister.
Well, I thank the Right Honourable Gentleman, but I want to offer my condolences to his constituent who wrote to him, and just to remind him of what I've said earlier. And with the greatest respect to him, I think that he should wait until the inquiry has concluded.
Ian Black.
Let's pause that there. What do you think it is, Patrick Maguire, that Boris Johnson thinks is going to come out in this report from Sue Gray, which is going to in some way take the heat out of this?
I think he is gambling, and you saw this, you saw the first shoots of this in the way he phrased his description of the party, i.e., after work drinks or a sort of constellation of work meetings. I think he thinks, and this was always likely, that Sue Gray is going to say these things may have been ill-judged, but because of the unique nature and constitutional status of government buildings, we cannot say for certain that they breached the guidance. And, you know, it will be for him to put a spin on that, saying, yes, it was misjudged, but the technicality will be, okay, I didn't oversee any law-breaking. Perhaps some individual civil servants will need to be disciplined. There might be a symbolic cull of my Downing Street in a circle, but I can present myself as the person who took on the chin and moved on.
So we've heard from Keir Starmer, leader of the Labour Party. We've heard from Ian Blackford from the SNP. Now let's hear from an Alliance MP from Northern Ireland. This is Stephen Fowey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today's apology is too little, too late. If the Prime Minister was sincere, he could have apologised at any stage over the past 18 months, rather than waiting until he was found out. My constituents in North Down and people across the UK feel betrayed by the Prime Minister. We've had over 150,000 deaths from COVID over the past couple of years. We have seen standards in public life trashed. So for once, can the Prime Minister do the honourable thing and resign for the sake of the public health message and for standards in our democracy?
Mr. Speaker, I can only repeat what I've said, and I understand the feelings he has about the effect of this pandemic on this country, and I certainly grieve for everybody who has died and who has suffered. But on his political point, can I propose that he waits for the inquiry to report?
Just that way.
Wait for the inquiry. Wait for the inquiry is the new...
it's the new minestrone.
Yes.
It feels significant that every single opposition MP is calling for the Prime Minister to resign. And the dangerous thing, when we next get a poll of voting intention, Tory MPs will see that Boris Johnson, in all likelihood, that Boris Johnson's apology hasn't cut ice, and that a majority of the public are endorsing parties that are calling for his head. And that will clearly have an impact on the decisions they make about the political direction of the Conservative Party and who should lead it.
There was something about, we've talked a lot about, you know, with the Labour Party banged on a lot about refurbishing the flat and wallpaper. That was a bit complicated. And when you try to follow the money around the graphics to try and explain what, you know, that was quite complicated. Who got contracts when? There's arguing. This is just such a straightforward thing that while the whole country was in lockdown, Boris Johnson went to a party in his garden. Everyone can understand that. He lied about it. He's now fessed up to it. In terms of striking right at the heart of his credibility and the Conservatives' election prospects, if we start seeing big shifts in polls, that's really going to pile pressure on, isn't it, from Tory MPs?
Yes, it really will. And, yeah, of course it will. It's as simple as that.
Although Tory MPs so far, it has to be said, loads and loads of criticism from opposition benches. Tory MPs so far, going for other things. There's one Tory MP up now talking about the discovery of some fossils. They've talked about the BBC. This is the MP, Suzanne Webb.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I recently visited my local job centre and I'm absolutely pleased to announce that the adult claim account is down 28% and the young adult claim account is down 40%. Will the Prime Minister join me in thanking all the hard work of the Stourbridge Job Centre for their dedication to actually achieve these results? And also to contribute to the jobs revival that's happening across the West Midlands. 61,000 new jobs since March 2021.
Oh, I don't think we even need to hear the answer to that. There's clearly Tory MPs have been put up, Patrick McGuire, to just ask about anything at all.
Yeah, and well, you know, hearing a Tory MP talk about the employment market is one is something I don't want to do this afternoon, but two, it's a reminder of the story Boris Johnson will be telling himself, which is, oh, you know, real decent people in you know, red walls, well, Stourbridge isn't quite the red wall, but, you know, good earthy West Midlands places like Stourbridge really care about their jobs and the cost of living. Not that the Tories are doing anything about that either. They don't care about what happened 2 years ago. That'll be what the Prime Minister is saying. So they do serve one, it fills airtime, and two, it's a reminder of what the Prime Minister will want to be hearing and what he'll be telling himself.
But I mean, the fundamental, one of the other fundamental problems is summed up on the front of the Times today. You've got "Say sorry or doom us all," ministers tell Johnson. I mean, he has at least done that. But the story on the top: Britain leads the Northern Hemisphere in outpacing pandemic. That's what he ought to be able to bang on about it.
Well, and he tried to.
But he's not washing, is he? He's not getting the credit. It's interesting, you know, the focus group we did this week, people gave him the credit, you know, benefit of the doubt, got through the pandemic, you know, it'd have been difficult for any government. But this just
the problem is telling a story about the those two stories are part of the same continuum.
Yeah.
And we all choose when we tell an anecdote which bit to emphasise. You know, if we're telling a story about a night out, you probably don't mention the kebab at the end, which ironically is what Boris Johnson is trying to emphasise this time.
Like, hang on, you're saying he went to a kebab shop after the party at Number 10?
Well, they're very fond of Deliveroo in Number 10.
Yeah,
they probably got a load of Five Guys. Follow the receipt.
I thought it was a bit ambitious when Keir Starmer talked about the drinks trolley being wheeled through Downing Street, but in fact, there was a load of people went to
Tesco Rosé,
the world's tiniest Tesco in Westminster,
glorified corridor.
Yeah, it's just
probably where COVID started. That place.
Some of the food that I've bought from there before is probably worse than eating a bat as well. Right, let's go back to the House of Commons now. This is the SNP MP Stephen Bonner.
Mr. Speaker, another week, another scandal for this Prime Minister and his utterly shameless government. For 2 years, my constituents made sacrifice after sacrifice, spending time away from our loved ones, missing out on important life events. Some paid the ultimate sacrifice while he parted away. Yep. Figures released just last night show that 79% of people in Scotland think the Prime Minister should step down. Yep. Does the Prime Minister now realise that it's clear to all that while he may not understand how to be socially distant from others, there is no doubt that he is morally distant from the rest of us across these nations, and the best thing he can do now is go. Resign, Prime Minister.
Yeah. Prime Minister. Well,
Mr. Speaker, I thank the honourable member for the SNP, and I repeat the point that I've made earlier on. I don't think that he should preempt or anticipate the inquiry.
It's strange that Boris Johnson didn't wait for Stephen Bonner's question to decide, go on, fine, now you've asked, I will resign.
But how is this remotely sustainable? Every government minister, every day this scandal continues, and it's going to roll on and on and on until we get Sue Gray's report. How is it remotely sustainable in the face of rising political pressure, rising anger, for the answer every government minister gives to every question, every pool interview the Prime Minister does? He can't hide under a rock for the next week, although that's the Chancellor's tactic of choice, isn't it?
But Rishi Sunak is in Ilfracombe, we should point out, rather than being on the front bench.
How on earth is this going to work? It's
don't
not.
Ask me. I'm not Jack Doyle, the under fire director of communications in Downing Street. So many of you have been sending in comments. There are lots of comments on the YouTube channel. There's an especially extended edition of PMQs Unpacked. You can watch it live on the Times Radio YouTube channel, where lots of you are posting comments. People saying this is all a distraction, waiting for Tory to stand up and ask about the frogs in a local pond under threat. Somebody says, I don't think Matt Jolly will get his show sponsored by Tesco anytime soon. They're very welcome, but it is a very, very small Tesco. John says, I think your listeners might welcome a little bit of balance this morning. Well, we played the question about the jobs figures.
Well, I think that there is a degree of balance. Most of the Parliamentary Conservative Party, the Labour Party, the SNP, the Liberal Democrats, everyone in Northern Ireland and Scotland agree that the Prime Minister should resign. or rather, that's probably an exaggeration about Tory MPs, but there are serious questions about the Prime Minister's leadership. You can't get more balanced than that.
And actually, there was that YouGov poll that came out yesterday, overnight, on how should Boris Johnson resign. And it was a huge figure, wasn't it? Was it 70-odd percent thought that Boris Johnson resign?
56%. Significantly, a third of Tory voters.
Yeah, which is
not significant. Chunky.
But anyway, John, I've read out your message, so that's a bit of balance. They just keep coming, though. This is the Labour MP, Carl Turner.
He's not apologised, Mr. Speaker, for breaking the rules and breaking the law. He's sorry because he's been caught. Yeah. He is bang to rights. So when my constituents were making unimaginable decisions, he was hosting a boozy party in Downing Street. So how does he think he can still maintain the one rule for him and another for the rest of us? Yeah. He cannot and he must resign.
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, I refer to the answer I gave earlier on.
He's not even bothering to give a full answer now.
No. And that was a question read at dictation pace.
Yeah,
by,
very good.
Carl Turner. Great for the hats in the press gallery.
Yeah, good for your shorthand. That was the Labour MP, Carl
Turner.
But
interesting, he represents John Prescott's old seat in Hull, which is no longer a similar story to a lot of the northern seats once occupied by New Labour Big Beast. No longer safe. It's a majority, razor thin majority of about 1,000. So, you know, in a microcosm there, in a nutshell, that's the Prime Minister's peril, right? He's handing hospital passes to his Tory MPs in the Red Wall and giving a reprieve to Labour MPs. The electoral dynamics here are fascinating.
OK, they just keep coming up. We've got the Conservative MP, Jack Brereton.
Brereton. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. £56 million through the Levelling Up Fund, £40 million through transforming cities. This is just some of the investment we've secured for Stoke-on-Trent. Right-honourable friend agree after decades of neglect, this Conservative Party is the only party that is levelling up opportunities in Stoke-on-Trent.
Prime Minister.
Well, I thank my honourable friend. He is a fantastic champion for Stoke-on-Trent. And in addition to all the things that we are supporting in Stoke-on-Trent, I'm delighted to say that Stoke-on-Trent will become the home to the Home Office as well.
Good news for Stoke-on-Trent, Patrick Maguire.
Well, at least good news for someone this afternoon. It's interesting to hear Tory MPs stick to their whip-written questions, isn't it? It's a reminder that even at the most, points of acute danger, Number 10 does retain that power of patronage.
But so many other MPs and cabinet ministers have been in the situation when they've been out and defended Boris Johnson, not just on this issue, been out and defended him, and then, you know, they've U-turned or they've capitulated or whatever it might be and made them look ridiculous. It's amazing they can still find these people.
Exactly. And if you listen to Jack Brereton talking about levelling up, for instance, Labour now have a story to tell about the Prime Minister's character that they can link to the government's domestic policy, which is people in Stoke-on-Trent, you've elected a Tory MP for only the first and second time, or second time, depending on about where in Stoke you live, in your lifetimes. Do you really think the Tories are going to change their spots and become a party of big state investment in this neglected part of the United Kingdom if he can't even level with you on other stuff?
And going into an election where you can say Boris Johnson is a liar, which is what the opposition will be able to say, applies to any election promise that you might make.
Exactly.
Interestingly, and I'm not in any way suggesting it's scientific, but there's now a poll on the YouTube channel, the Times Radio YouTube channel, asking, is the matter of the Garden Party now settled? Do you want to have a guess how many people say no?
I am going to say 90%.
93% of people so far. So you're going to want to
That's
know.
A Pyongyang margin, that is.
Go on YouTube, search Times Radio. You can watch Patrick and I as we pick our way through extraordinary edition of PMQs. We've now got the Labour MP, Chris Bryant.
Speaker, so the Prime Minister didn't spot that he was at a social event. That's the excuse, isn't it? Come off it. I mean, how stupid does the Prime Minister think the British people are? The worst of it is he's already managed to completely destroy Allegra Stratton's career. He's tarnished the reputation of Lord Gyte. And now he's making fools of every single MP who cheered him earlier. Every single one who goes out on the radio and television to defend this shower of shenanigans. Would it not be absolutely despicable if, in the search for a scapegoat, some junior member of staff ends up losing their job, but he kept his?
I'm grateful as ever, Mr. Speaker, to the Right Honourable Gentleman. I think a former member of the Conservative Party, as I understand it. But I'm grateful to him for his party political advice. I don't agree with him, Mr. Speaker. I've come to this House to make amends, to explain what happened on May the 20th, and to apologise. But, Mr. Speaker, I really think that, with all humility, I must ask him to wait for the result of the inquiry.
Oh, well, that's probably enough of Boris Johnson waiting for the inquiry. I thought when he said shower of shenanigans, I thought he was going to say something else.
Well, as a former vicar, he's very good at bolderising his speeches. As well as a former member of the Tory party, you could tell with that bar, Boris Johnson is getting very annoyed. These attacks are getting under his skin if he's lapsing back into indiscreet personal attacks like that.
And I don't know if Chris Byrne... Well, I know that Chris Byrne is a reader of The Times, but it was almost an abridged version of Matthew Powys' column in The Times on Saturday, where he talked about basically anyone who gets close to Boris Johnson bears the scars of it. It is Allegra Stratton, it is Lord Gyte, the ethics advisor, who's got himself into such a knot over the refurbishment of Number 10. Cabinet ministers, special advisers, anyone who has any interaction with Boris Johnson ends up worse off as a result.
And everybody tells himself, oh, I'll be the one to tame him. I'm a figure of such...
Oh, no, he winked at me across the room.
Yeah, he gets me.
He gets me.
But the point he made about stupidity is a key one. But taking people for fools, i.e. drawing this distinction that most people say, as Chris Bryant did, come off it as an email saying, bring your own booze. But he's denying personal liability for organising the party. And in turn, he hopes that's what Sugrey will not assign to him. And that's his narrow path to survival in office, if not in power or moral authority.
And it's a completely different topic, of course. But when Theresa May said nothing has changed, when they clearly dropped a massive policy from their manifesto, that just went to the heart of, what are you talking about? I'm not an idiot. I can see you've dropped something. It's a completely different topic, but it did have an impact. Well, it's, I think the last question in this extra special bumper edition of PMQ's Unpacked, saved for the Lib Dem leader, Sir Ed Davey.
Mr. Speaker, can I join in the tributes to Jack Dromey, an outstanding trade unionist and member of this House? Mr. Speaker, after another shameful week for his government, this has been a shameful attempt to apologise to this House today. So can the Prime Minister explain why the only person to resign so far for this scandal is Allegra Stratton, a woman, while he, the man who sanctioned and attended at least one party in 10 Downing Street, still sits in his place? Mr. Speaker, advisers advise and ministers decide. So will the Prime Minister, for the good of the country, accept that the party is over and decide to resign?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I thank him for his question. I respect the point that he's making, but I must say I disagree, and I would ask him
to wait the inquiry from Sugrey. We all know all together now, Patrick McGuire.
We certainly do. I thought it was quite a cute point made by Davey there in highlighting the mistreatment of Allegra Stratton, if you want to call it that, saying the only person who's carried the can is a woman.
At the party. I mean, she clearly knew about it and joked about it off camera with a group of people who may or may not have been at the said cheese and wine party. But she literally laughed about an event she wasn't at, whereas Boris Johnson lied about an event he was at.
Yes, exactly. And if Ed Davey is deliberately highlighting that Boris Johnson has a woman problem, both in his personal life, in his professional life, but also he hopes to turn that into a woman problem electorally. We know the Tories poll badly among women, or Boris Johnson personally polls much worse among women. You know, his victory in 2019 was very much fueled by working class men, among whom he polls much better.
That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcast from?
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.